In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We hear a presentation from Dr. David Martin from September 13th at the European Parliament. The presentations were made at the invitation of MEP Christine Anderson of Germany. Dr. Martin looks at the adverse role of the WHO after two waves of injury to humans from SARS-CoV-2 and the experimental shots. He emphasizes that the World Health Organization is part of the worldwide NGO government syndicate and deceived the world and impeded doctors' ability to treat patients effectively. In the last 2 years, numerous reports fill headlines of professional athletes dying on the field, newscasters falling over on camera, and young people having cardiac arrest. A recent study shows that 17 countries found a, quote, definitive causal link between peaks in all-cause mortality and the rapid rollouts of the COVID-19 shots and boosters. We go to hear that presentation by Dr. David Martin, then we'll hear part of the interview with Miriam Heinen about Harvard professor Charles Lieber, who is known worldwide for his work in developing implantable nanosensors in the body. We also look at the evidence of how Lieber was involved in a program that accessed the brain trust of Chinese scientists in Wuhan to continue developing nanotech implants. Let's go now to listen to Dr. David Martin.
A group of very small number of criminal industrial conspirators decided to subordinate the entirety of the human population for the purpose of their sinister plans to enrich themselves while impoverishing and killing the rest of humanity. And I'm done being polite. We've long passed polite. When the words acceptable death rate become part of an industrial norm, we have lost the plot of humanity. And that's not my words. Those were the words of the World Health Organization and of Pfizer and of Moderna when they were given the authorization to begin the process of killing human beings in the interest of advancing their goals. And I'm also not going to sugarcoat this. This is a criminal cartel. We are acting as though there's some sort of redeemable quality somewhere in some esoteric layer that somehow or another the World Health Organization must have some salutatory benefit. Well, I'm going to tell you, since its formation in the 1940s, the World Health Organization has been nothing more than a criminal cartel that has a sole and singular intent. And I will show you the document that proves what I'm saying. This is not an allegation. This is actually provable by their own words in their own hand. And they use a four-step process to execute every one of their nefarious plans. They begin by planning an exercise, then they go to the business of funding that exercise, then they create the rationale for the thing that they're going to do, and then they deploy and profit from it. And in violation of 15 U.S. Code Section 19, which for those of you listening, coincidentally, started with the Clayton Act in the same year that the World Health Organization in the United States, 1913, the same year the World Health Organization's progenitors also started. So I find it fascinating that we passed the Clayton Act in 1913 and we set in motion 110 years ago the criminal conspiracy, which we now call the World Health Organization, 110 years later. And in violation of TIFU, or TEFU, I don't know even how to say it, the TFEU, the treaty allegedly for the functioning of the European Union, which I think needs to now be called the Treaty for the Dysfunctional European Cabal, Article 101 unambiguously lays out the conditions that this was never a public health anything, It was racketeering for the purpose of instilling terror to adapt the behavior of a population. Period. That's what it was. That's what it always was. And we can come up with every theoretical argument we want to make about things, but the problem, even with the theory that we had an outbreak of something, is falsifiable for the data from Zurich that shows us that in the year of the death pandemic of the globe, life insurance companies paid $30 billion less in claims. Now, if there's a medical professional or a social professional or anybody else who wants to debate that we could develop a virus cunningly that could find out your bank account, your insurance policy statements, and whether you're paid up on your premiums, that's a big ask. It turns out that the data is unambiguous. We did not have a pandemic. We had genocide. And we need to call it what it is. Next slide. When I say we planned it, let's make sure we understand exactly the not-so-fine print of the fine print. And I want to call your attention first to the right-hand column of the slide. This is the 2011 data that the World Health Organization, the Wellcome Trust, PATH, and the Gates Foundation did on their wonderful worldwide program for a malaria vaccine for children under the age of 6 months of age. And in their clinical trial, it's helpful to point out that they murdered 66 children in the vaccine group and then cunningly used the term control for a control group in which they murdered 28 children. Now, the reason I said murdered and the reason why I use that term is because it's exactly what it was. Because it turns out that this control group was not a saline injection. It was not some sort of innocuous, innocent thing. It was actually a cocktail of other known pathogenic disease-carrying injections. The control group was known to kill people, and the experimental control group was actually theoretically maybe going to kill people. And what we did was we actually went ahead and murdered them all. And cunningly, under Article 5, Section 13, which I've put on this slide, I want you to understand why I said at its formation in 1947, when the WHO was funded and founded, it was funded and founded by people intent to commit a crime because of their own language. Section 13 of Article 5 ends with the following statement. Immunity from personal arrest or detention, blah, blah, blah. Immunity from legal process of every kind. Now, if you didn't intend to commit a crime, why would you need to give yourself permanent and absolute immunity from every form of prosecution, and it's worse, even investigation for prosecution of every kind? People sit there and pretend, well, that's like diplomatic immunity. Do you realize this isn't even meeting the standard of diplomatic immunity? This is a criminal organization who set in motion their own law to protect themselves against crimes they knew they were going to commit. And when I say they knew they were going to commit, I mean they knew it, because their first director general, none other than Dr. René San, who happened to be in the hospitality of the Germans in Dachau in 1940 earlier, in 1947, mysteriously, with the largesse of the Rockefeller Foundation, was nominated to become the first director general of the WHO. And within 5 short years, René San decided to authorize the real purpose of the WHO in writing by then Director General Dr. Brock Chisholm, who advocated for population control as its primary objective. Does that sound like public health to anyone in this room? This is not public health. This is the advancement of the same genocidal program that began with the Carnegie Foundation's funding of the Eugenics Office at Cold Spring Labs in the United States in 1913 under the philanthropy of Andrew Carnegie. People, stop fooling yourself. We debate the leaves on the tree of what we call this pandemic thing, but we're not going to the root. This was an organized crime, racketeering entity set up to give itself first absolute immunity and then execute its plans to make sure it controls who lives, who dies, and who gets any chance at life. And if you think that I am somehow inflating numbers, let me be unambiguous. Under every treatment of tax provision, if I were to tell you that there is an 88% controlling interest of any organization, you might conclude that that actually aggregates into a controlling interest. And it turns out that if we look at the foundation donations to the World Health Organization, 88% of those come from a single organization, the Gates Foundation. That constitutes a violation of every competitiveness law in Europe and every competitiveness law in the United States. This is absolutely not only not an independent, charitably funded donation, but more importantly, under the tax laws on both sides of the Atlantic, this constitutes directed donations which specifically are forbidden and do not have any place anywhere in the Charter of the World Health Organization or any of the UN-affiliated organizations. When I say this is a crime, I mean it's a tax crime, a racketeering crime, a money laundering crime, and now the crime of racketeering leading to murder and global terrorism. Next slide. I told you that the second thing after they plan it is they fund it. And why don't we use the criminals' language in their own words, because it's the best way to say it. When they actually planned the release of the use of a biologically modified chimera associated with the model derived from coronavirus, they actually said the following. To sustain the funding base beyond the crisis, we need to increase the public understanding for the needful medical countermeasures such as a pan-influenza or pan-coronavirus vaccine. Now, let me pause for just one moment and remind you that the crisis that they were speaking of was a crisis of diminishing funding. There was no health crisis. This was a crisis of their coffers were starting to run dry. That's the crisis. And let's read on. A key driver is the media, and the economics will follow the hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. That is officially the statement made by the conspiratorial cabal that by that time was the decade of vaccines put in motion in 2011 by the Global Preparedness Monitoring Board of the World Health Organization, and it was the funding base for Peter Daszak's partnership with the chimeric production of pathogens both in North Carolina and in Wuhan. So don't tell me that we have to do an investigation into where this came from. The criminals have admitted to it in their own words. Next slide. And now we get the fun one that no one in Congress is willing to address, which is the elephant in the room. On October the 21st, 2014, despite the multiple conversations between Senator Rand Paul and Anthony Fauci, where we've been told that Rand Paul has done everything he can to put Fauci on the ropes, he has had in his possession the letter that you see on the left. And it is the letter, conveniently on NIAID letterhead, sent to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, which unambiguously states that during the gain-of-function moratorium, which, by the way, if we use the word moratorium, feels like that means you're supposed to stop. Why don't we go ahead and look at two pieces of this letter? First, the second bullet under Project One, which, by the way, was not part of the original grant. This was to look at the novel functions of the virus pathogenesis in vivo. You know what that means? In living systems. The grant was supposed to be clinical simulations and models, but this grant was modified with this letter to say we were going to authorize gain-of-function research during the moratorium in living systems. And then we love the last paragraph of this letter, which conveniently says, as your grant is currently funded, this pause is voluntary. How many times have you met a voluntary moratorium? And the best part about it is that if we look at the very last line, or continue to conduct the applicable gain-of-function research until the end of the currently active budget period. But here comes the problem. You know who is supplying the budget? An indefinite term, unlimited amount contract from DARPA and from NIH. Isn't it convenient to have a perpetually funded project that needs to stop when the money runs out, when you find out that there is no point where the money runs out because there is no end to the thing that has no end? And lest you think that I'm making an allegation, which I'm not, I'm making an accusation. Let's be clear. And there's a big difference. I'm not alleging anything. They actually went to the trouble of telling us that it was going to be the Wuhan virus that was going to get us. As you see on the right-hand side of the screen, published in 2016, March 14th of 2016, the SARS-like Wuhan Institute of Virology Virus 1, and I quote, is poised for human emergence. Does that sound like we're just surprised that something in Wuhan went a little haywire in December of 2019? Or does it feel like we were told, look at Wuhan, and look at coronavirus, and look at what we've been doing to manipulate coronavirus in Wuhan and in the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and lo and behold, we're going to go ahead and tell you that we're ready to release it in 2016. And then they created it. Now, all of you know that I am criticized globally for my use of the term biological warfare. I do that because I am credentialed to do that. I happen to be, for the United States government, in the early part of the 2000s and the latter part of the 90s, a person who was sent around the world to look at the proliferation of biological and chemical weapons. I'm acutely familiar with the definition of what a biological warfare agent is in the 18 U.S. Code, the criminal code, of violations of biological and chemical weapons. And so my assessment is, in fact, professional and right. And the reason for that is I'm the one credentialed to make that determination for the United States government for many years. That's why I say it. But let's pretend for the moment that I'm just a nut job. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. So why don't we look at what the criminals said themselves, shall we? In 2005, at a conference sponsored by DARPA and the MITRE Corporation, Ralph Baric, the architect of the lethal strand that has been injected into millions and billions of people's arms, that Ralph Baric was sponsored to present the following, and let's go ahead and use his words, presentation. Synthetic coronaviruses, biohacking, biowarfare-enabling technologies. Does that sound like a public health distribution program? Does that sound like something that is accidentally misinterpreted to mean something else? Or does biological warfare enabling technologies sound like not countermeasures or pandemic preparedness? It sounds to me like biological warfare enabling technologies. And the reason why I have that hunch is what followed was he received, next to his NIAID grants, non-competitive DARPA grants in matching funds for over $140 million of aggregate funding going into his and his related programs on synthetic biological warfare enabling technologies. So do I have a problem calling the injection a biological warfare enabling technology? Absolutely not, because that's what they called it. And we know that they knew they called it that on September 18th, 2019. Because on September 18th, 2019, the racketeering, co-conspiring cabal of interlocking directorates also known as the World Health Organization, said that they were going to conduct an experience for the world that was going to be a rapidly spreading pandemic due to a lethal respiratory pathogen. The lethality in that statement is the problem. They didn't say we're going to maybe get a little bit of sniffles going around. They said we were going to actually have the promulgation of a deadly agent. And the stated reason, in September 2020, the progress indicator is that the world would accept a universal vaccine. Not, we'll look at other options of treatment. Not, we'll have a look at what might be early intervention, as Dr. McCullough has so clearly advocated for in many, many, many instances. Not that. We stated on September 18th, 2019, we were intending to kill. And we were intending to kill to create the fear that would drive people to accept something that without coercion, no one would have accepted. And that's published by the criminal racketeers. Deploy and profit from it. We were told investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. And lo and behold, guess what they saw? Profit at the end of the process. 2022. $100 billion for Pfizer of public funds. Moderna, after lying to the Congress in October of 2020 when they were asked to actually verify whether NIAID was promoting an injection that would enrich NIAID, where Anthony Fauci and the entire team at NIH said that they had no financial interest in their recommendation, they receive a back payment royalty of $400 million for the first payment of the royalty. $400 million. More than any institute of health has ever received in a single payment for a single invention in the history of American medical research. And lo and behold, what do we receive after that? A request from the World Health Organization to expand its budget by 11% to make sure that the people who profited from it donate to it. And guess what they just did? They laundered the money right back. This is not a public health crime. This is actually not a constitutional crime. This is a criminal act done by a criminal institution established to enable criminal behavior since its foundation in 1947. That is what this is. And we should not be debating the merits of democracy or liberty or anything else, as irrational as that would be if we stood at a bank robbery and debated the merits of printing dollar bills. The problem is not the dollar bills. It's the bank robber. And the problem here is not health. And it's not public health, and it's not the suppression of information and the suppression of dissident views and the absolute unconscionable treatment of physicians around the world and academicians around the world who spoke out against this. That's not the crime. The crime is that we had criminal racketeers who conspired and developed a, quote, emergency. The same criminal racketeers planned, manufactured, and did all agency capture to make sure that you were told that you would use terms that they tell you to use. Vaccine, face mask, health, social distancing, none of which had ordinary use definition. So we just used them. Criminal racketeers price fixed with interlocking directorates where known competitors came together and fixed prices in direct collusion in violation of both European Union standards and in violation of both the Sherman and the Clayton Act in the United States. These were crimes. It was organized crime, and we should treat it as such. Criminal racketeers publicly lied under oath, and this resulted in the death and destruction of liberty, and most importantly, the death and destruction of the integrity of well-meaning people who sit here today doing everything they can within their power to try to treat the calamities created by this catastrophe. I will not for a moment denigrate the multiple contributions of amazing academic and medical professionals who've tried desperately to step into the gap and stop the corrupt outcomes of these crimes. But I will, without doubt, say the following. until we treat this as a criminal conspiracy of criminal racketeers resulting in global terrorism for the purpose of profiteering and murder, until we have that conversation, we're having the wrong conversation. Because we are not here to debate the merits of a modified agreement for a criminal racketeering organization. We are here to end the criminal organization itself. This is my call to every single person on this planet. Don't just limit the power of the WHO. Destroy the WHO. Thank you very much.
That was Dr. David Martin speaking at the European Parliament in September. We go now to hear part of the interview with Miriam Heinen about Harvard professor Charles Lieber. I recently read that radiation poisoning symptoms are similar to COVID symptoms. Could you talk, please, about what you've unearthed about fifth-generation millimeter wave frequency, or 5G, and nanomesh, nanosensors in the body, and the work of Charles Lieber?
Okay, so first I'd like to address the similarities between radiation poisoning and supposed coronavirus symptoms. I'll start by saying that in 2018, as fate would have it, I lived on a 5G test street in Beechwood, California. And I am very sensitive. I have multiple chemical sensitivities. At the time, I was living with mold and I was dealing with that. And I noticed that my symptoms were worse and I didn't know what to attribute it to. Now we are electricity and water, and I'm also a functional medicine coach and consultant. So I was looking into mold and I came across Dr. Klinghart, who is a brilliant functional medicine practitioner. He conducted a study to looking at two petri dishes. There's mold and then there's the mold spores, the mycotoxins that are dead but deadlier. And one was surrounded by a Faraday cage. The other petri dish emitted 400 times more mycotoxins. So the idea is that these ultra high millimeter waves agitate fungus, pathogens, parasites. Again, we are water and we are electricity. And there's a lot of debate on downplaying 5G, saying that it's harmless. When I got sick in Miami a year and a half ago, it was exact same time that they were amping up the 5G. I know that because they literally stopped the airplanes from taking off. This wasn't conspiracy. Literally, they said the planes weren't leaving because of 5G. So I got sick, lost my sense of smell and taste, which scared me very, very much. And because I have super nasal powers and I think the sense of smell is very underrated but primordial. And then I had watery stools and I was throwing up. This nothing had to do with the respiratory illness. Nothing was wrong with my lungs. And I was writing, ironically, for Dr. Tenpenny, for Vaxter, now the Tenpenny Report. And I realized, wow, that is radiation poison. Now, in reference to the nanomesh, it's very sad to me, still today, 3 years later, since we first learned about Charles Lieber, that it's very much downplayed, this interaction between something external, 5G, perhaps 6G, and the Internet of Bodies, and this interplay, when there are patents that show how something externally will impact the internal. Now, as far as the carbon nanotube nanomesh, you can find Charles Lieber's name on several patents having to do with this interaction between an external 5G wave and something inside of our bodies. Now, the idea or the way they're presenting it is that it would be recording your internal biomarkers, right? But what if it's the other way around, and certain waves are being targeted to the person. Now, after writing these articles, for instance, regarding Neuralink, I've had several people approach me and tell me that they have this stuff inside of their bodies and asking me for help. Now, I'm not one, many would just say, oh, they're crazy. But I would not be one. I couldn't help them, but I wouldn't be one to discount them. And then that also kind of bleeds into possible gang stalking and certain waves that could be directed to people. I know that in, let's say, South Beach, I feel the 5G. I'm very sensitive, but not everybody is that sensitive. And so they could be just discounted and summed up as cuckoo.
Now, regarding the people coming up to you, speaking about the nanosensors, or they can tell that there's something inside of them, that's powerful. And I did read Monoatomic Gold, which isn't very expensive, does help eliminate that nanotech inside people's bodies. Now, I read it. I'm just saying, research that, because there might be some help in that direction.
I'd like to say, just to sum up, that these nanoparticles, the idea would be that they can be activated, right, by 5G microwaves in the body. And so someone can arguably influence them, control them, change our information field, the quantum field, our DNA. And this is what you're describing as a neural mesh. But because it's still pretty out there. I mean, we're having still a hard time telling people that big pharma doesn't have the best interest. And I think on one hand, a lot of people got the flu because the flu, disappeared from the face of the planet. But that others got something that is a bioweapon that is not natural, that didn't feel natural. I have people in my life that are long haulers, quote unquote, that are still contending. And when they got sick, and they said that it did not feel natural. And people can find through the Birbright Institute that there was patents and studies funded by the Wellcome Trust and DARPA and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the EU, the US Patent Office. So this is not sci-fi. This is true. In Wuhan, when this hit, China, the Hubei province was the first place in China to launch 5G. So one has to wonder what these waves can do. And if anyone has read about HARP, for instance, they should not discount the capability of certain frequencies when, again, we are electricity and water.
Electricity is a very important component in our biological functions, especially our heartbeat. In Wuhan, China, there are multiple 5G antennas, I've read, that were used along highways for self-driving vehicles. It's just interesting. You have Charles Lieber, you have the Thousand Talents Program, Charles Lieber working with multiple Chinese scientists on nanosensors, developing implantable nanotechnology that could and would be activated by fifth generation millimeter waves. You have that technology installed right there within Wuhan, China. And then you have the broader connection with how it all fits together, which is the title of an article that you wrote for Vaxter. Recently, headlines are in newspapers about the Atlanta airport using digital face recognition IDs, adopting China's model for 24/7 surveillance, and another recent story, residents are pushing back against smart city technology in San Diego. And this article you wrote for Vaxxer titled How It All Fits Together, you have the smart cities, 5G, street lamps with microphones and cameras, appliances connected to the Internet of Things. And before we get further into the Internet of Bodies, would you please talk more about smart cities in the context of Professor Lieber's work?
When the coronavirus hit and everybody was locked down, as I said earlier, that what was initiated was the 5G fast plan, actually before the coronavirus, so everything and that could be connected would be connected. And so this were Internet of Things and smart cities, where we're really looking at a kind of CCP existence. Like what I hear in London is it's the worst, that there's no area that doesn't have cameras. And even though I'm not in San Diego, actually South Beach, there's cameras every few feet. And you have to wonder, why are all these cameras along the borders, and how is this going to play, into a social credit system, and what's the role of the smart cities? Well, when you can't go anywhere without being on camera, that's quite disturbing. And if you're not an abiding citizen, like, you know, I shared with you off camera that I'm very censored, but this is a way, not only censored, they have attacked my ability to make a livelihood. And so I'm not a good obedient sheeple. I'm not a good citizen. I'm an errant. I'm a defiant. I speak out. I speak up. And for that, I will be punished. So not even before getting into the smart cities, let's say you shop on Uber Eats and you complain and you exercise your right to say, this is not what I ordered. Well, you're then banned, or you're no longer allowed to ask for a refund. Isn't this paving the way to a social credit system? And so in China, you see the cameras. They're using smart glasses to spot criminals. There's cameras. There's smart meters now, smart cars, smart roads, smart phones, smart cities, smart. But is it really smart? Or is it quite deviant and wicked? Do you want to be living in a world where you have no privacy? Now, some people would say, I rather give up, forfeit my privacy for convenience.
Yes, and that's a really interesting article that was published on Vaxxer that you wrote, titled How It All Fits Together, if listeners want to take a look at that. Our guest is Miriam Heinen, and we're talking about her research and writings on Harvard professor Charles Lieber. This individual faced 6 counts of tax evasion, failing to disclose foreign bank accounts, and he was hiding his collaborative work with China. He didn't want people and the federal government to know about his work into nanosensors in connection with fifth-generation wireless radiation and nanosensors in the body. He didn't want people connecting these dots, but our guest relentlessly had done that, and she has faced some retribution, and which has happened to a lot of people researching into this realm, especially early on. I just found out about Charles Lieber through the research of people such as Josh Reed that are going into detail about the black operations and the whistleblowers. And it was mentioned that some of these professors had special access program connections. This is access to reverse engineered alien technology. And I know it's a jump, but I wondered about Professor Charles Lieber and his name being mentioned in this context, And these are deeply classified materials, and some of which are known to have documents related to reverse engineered alien technology. And I'm wondering if whistleblowers are coming forward now because of the larger implications of forcibly integrating humans with nanosensors and then hitting them with the 5G frequency. Have you thought about that?
I'm surprised, Jeff, that there aren't more whistleblowers. I don't personally need whistleblowers to know the deeper agenda, but I mean, what you've said is touching upon a lot of things. I personally do not think that this is necessarily human. I don't, there's this trifecta between heavy metals and parasites and nanotech, and I feel that that we're being nanoformed, not terraformed, that they're putting this nano in the clouds, in the earth, in the lettuce, in the spinach, in the cows, and in you. Not you specifically, but in humans. So what is really going on, and why are they using, for instance, chitosan from insects as a substrate to grow with the nano? Again, there's this very strange relationship between parasites and nanotech and heavy metals. And why do I say parasites? Well, why is that they went after ivermectin? Because it works against parasites. And I, having done a deep dive on parasites, probably one of the best articles I've ever written in my life, how I lost my partner to a parasite, looking at the natural world and how, for instance, a small microscopic puppeteer can control an entire human, like in the case of toxoplasmosis, that, again, a very, very small creature can have an impact on an entire human being's behavior, and people thinking that that's outlandish, but that is a fact, that parasites can modify behavior. So at this point in my research, knowing that this is an old playbook when I speak about viruses, because you can see the pandemic impresario, aka Fauci, behind AIDS, behind Zika, and amping up, I would argue that perhaps all the viruses are synthetic, and that there is some otherworldly force, just maybe like in the FBI and the X-Files episode, where some alien artificial intelligence has made a deal with some of these leaders, and that there's a harvest going on. And I know that that sounds really crazy, but if you even look at, you know, you can look at grants, you can look at studies. Like I just posted the other day, DARPA awards Moderna, which I call Moderna Therapeutics, grants them $25 million to develop messenger RNA therapeutics. And again, if you read Ray Kurzweil's book, where it specifically says that the human cell will be replaced by my nanotech. I think that there is a bigger agenda afoot, and this nanotech and this path to singularity is to merge man with machine. And you can distill it and say this is evil and make it like Christian versus Satan. But look, I eat meat. Am I evil? No. So if we're food for some creature and there's a harvest, because I'm sorry, there's a silent, blatant culling going on. And I called it, and I knew it, and many people did, and it's not abated. For those out there like, the coronavirus is over. No, it's not. We're just starting to mop up the mess. And every single day, we learn a little bit more about this never-before-used technology. And I would recommend your audience just look at the film Final Days. I'm a big fan of Karen Kingston's work.
And you noted earlier, Miriam, that Professor Charles Lieber's father Robert Lieber has an interesting background. There seems to be a continuity in spying activity and lying about their covert research. Robert worked on missile defense systems in the military and exotic radar systems with defense contractors, such as RCA, which was funded by ARPA. And Charles Lieber was funded in Harvard's nanotube work by DARPA. You do have a legacy here. And did you find more information that you think is important to share with listeners about Robert Lieber?
Well, he worked for RCA, ITT, the Navy. They say he was an RCA satellite spy. And the RCA Aegis unit is now run by Lockheed Martin. And so it seems that there's a part, I'd have to go back, it was actually not an article that I wrote, where the early beginnings, they changed his name and didn't talk about his real roots, Daddy Lieber, Robert Lieber. But he was arguably a spook. His son has fallen in his footsteps. He's contributed, Daddy has contributed to digital computer simulation of radar systems, which now is for Lockheed Martin. He was a satellite tracking and radar spy. He also worked for Serco and Quinitai-Q and the British Privy Council. So does it stay in the family? Again, he was too prized of an asset to go to jail. Of course, they talked about his fourth stage cancer, which is now miraculously in remission. I want to say that early on, I was reading the docket and following the case. I was like, wow, the judge is 93 years old, also graduated from Harvard. And it was Massachusetts, where he's from, had right. just declared.
You're talking about Charles Lieber here.
Yes, sorry, I'm talking about Charles Lieber. So Massachusetts had just declared a lockdown, and Charlie had to relinquish his passport. And yet, the day after the lockdown, in the docket, you could see he goes to meet with the judge, and she grants him permission to go to, I think it was Pennsylvania or Jersey. Point is, he was allowed to leave the state. So again, we are under lockdown. We have to bury our loved ones via Zoom. But people like Charlie get special permission when apparently initially he was thought to be a spy. So why is that? Why is that he gets, you know, restitution of $33,000, but he's a free man.
Indeed, and a lot of the work that he had been involved with is sort of swept under the rug, but I do believe it's going to come back up, and people such as Dr. Peter Hotez has made the news recently, and I think this is interesting because now I believe there are other researchers connecting dots. Dr. Hotez, as many listeners might know, was making numerous appearances on network TV advocating to take the, it's, I don't know what brand, but he was suggesting, but he was saying take the shots. And now there's news about connections with Dr. Hotez and Dr. Fauci and Dr. Yang, Dr. Du, Dr. Yusen with Chinese military scientists, the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and the Furin Cleavage Site. And that is the term for, I think, it's how to create the gain of function. I think it's a space that it can accept a synthetic protein within the genetic protein chains. But Dr. Yusen is a former director of the Laboratory of Pathogen and Biosecurity at the Beijing Institute of Microbiology, and he filed the world's first patent application for a COVID-19 vaccine in China way back in February of 2020, I think. What is the implication here of this recent news regarding Peter Hotez?
Peter Hotez has been a big pharma shill for a long, long time. And I have a group on Twitter. We're about 50. And we've been going strong since 2018 when I created the group. And Hotez is maybe now, in the past couple of weeks, more popular for his cowardliness, and he's never, no matter how much money you throw at him, his overlords will not allow him to speak with RFK Jr. He's arguably even wrote a book to kind of send people along a different track, that his child is not autistic because of vaccines, and he's sold his soul to the devil. I don't know how anyone can take this bow tie wearing shill seriously. There's a montage circulating on social media of every time he's flip-flopped. I mean, he has no credibility, and yet the prostitutes and the parrots position him as having any credibility. You're referencing a story that Kanoka News put out of all these links. You know, you mentioned this Yuzhen, who's dead. I mean, he was shortly after the patent fell off a roof at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and so who knows? But this SARS-CoV has been in motion, and I mean, this brings forth the origin story. So not many people know that the U.S. Senate put out a 300-page report called Muddying the Waters. And I say muddy waters ain't just a blues singer anymore, folks. They are muddying the waters. And there's so much truth mixed with lies. And it's very, very difficult to make sense of it all. When you look at the playbook of viruses, patient zero is always very fuzzy. And in fact, in this origin story, there's several patient zeros. Apparently there was a patient zero who worked at the wet market when we were still peddling that crock, which is really, people should watch the film Contagion, which was dictated by Larry Brilliant, who worked for the WHO and worked for Google. And he, I have a quote of his at Aspen Institute, sitting beside Fauci, saying, "We went to Hollywood and told them to make this movie." Who's we, buddy? Who's we? So arguably, this wet market nonsense, that if anyone still is peddling pangolin or raccoon dog BS. So they are muddying the waters, and there's links between, you know, the PLA and WIV and UC Davis, America, Fauci. And you're referencing Hotez and his role, distinguished professor at Baylor, please. And so he had a substantial research grant from the NIAID, aka Fauci. And this had to do with RBD, recombinant protein-based SARS vaccine for biodefense. And Dr. Shibo Jiang was listed as the principal investigator. The other person that you mentioned, his name is Yuzhen, and he is the one who leapt off of the WIV roof and is dead. So what is going on when you have the PLA and then you have American research facilities and you have Fauci? It seems like a big family, and they're messing. You know, let's bring in Ralph Baric and his humanized mice, and Peter Daszak and EcoHealth Alliance, and it's all connected. And the truth is that these virus hunters, quote unquote, have been at it for a really long time. And if you take a step back and you look at this supposed science, it's Frankenstein. It's horrific. It's scary. What are they doing? Mixing, splicing. It's the same thing with GMO. You know, we've normalized that it's okay to splice a trout with a tomato. It's like leave nature alone. So on one hand, it's pandemic preparedness, but then if it's the Chinese, it's a bioweapon. And so the IC, the intelligent communities also came out with a 10-page flimsy report, in my opinion, and they all disagree. But one thing they agree on is this ain't a bioweapon. And so they're edging, what they're doing is they're edging closer. They're co-opting the narrative. It's like, okay, now they're ready to, you know, now it's a laboratory leak, but it was a ventilation issue. It wasn't purposeful. Not true. I don't buy that for a nanosecond.
Right now, this fourth industrial complex and the blockchain systems to tokenize real-world assets or private property with attached credit scores that aligned with a certain agenda is being aggressively pursued and is an important foundation, as we're learning, for the back end of smart cities. And for decades, Charles Lieber and others developed nanosensors for monitoring parts of the human body. They call it the Internet of Bodies, as you've pointed out. And with this level of transhuman technology, it's setting up a parallel virtual world, tokenizing human organs, and that doesn't seem far-fetched right now at all. If listeners want to learn more about your work, Mariam, how would they go find your articles and you on social media?
Thank you, Jeff. I would invite people to follow me on Twitter, 10 Appeals, and Elon Musk later, that I don't think is our friend. So I'm at Mariam Hinane, M-A-R-Y-A-M as in Mary, H-E-N-E-I-N. I'm best known for the film Vanishing of the Bees. And people can also check out my very underestimated or under just hidden film called The Real Timeline on My Movies Plus on the George Floyd PSYOP. I have a collection of protocol for vaccine injured human beings. And I also have an 80-page ebook that first came out in part on the Tenpenny Report called Understanding the Mechanisms of the COVID-19 quote-unquote vaccine. All of that can be found on MariamHinane.com. And I love DMs. I love having people reach out to me. For instance, not only did they delete my ebook, Trying to Help Human Beings That Are Suffering, on Smashwords, they not only deleted my book, but all my other ebooks and my 6-year profile on Smashwords. So people can help me stay alive, so to speak, because I love being a journalist and I'm a damn good one. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mariam, for being a guest on In Other News. Really appreciate your work.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.